Hello and welcome to the Best Practice Network Apprenticeship Podcast. I'm Tasha Singleton, the program lead for Early Years Senior Leadership Apprenticeship, and I am joined by my co-host, Emma Minchella, our Deputy Curriculum Manager. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Tasha. You've got a person in the background here, like putting you off today. I could see her giggling when you introduced.
She is. She's hard work, this one. Today,
we've got cheeky guests.
Today, we are joined by Lauren Hemmings, who is a performance manager here at Best Practice Network, and I must say, former nursery area manager extraordinaire. Hello, Lauren.
Yeah. Hello. Thank you very much for having me. I'm not a troublemaker. I don't know what you're referring to.
I think none of us are troublemakers here. We all get on quite well, don't we?
Indeed.
Well, I can't thank you both enough for joining me as we explore this topic of what we mean by organizational values. You might know that this is the mini series that I am developing for the level seven, the early years level seven senior leaders. And we've been exploring some really interesting topics. And currently we are talking about organizational values and exactly what that means. So if we start with the big picture, just cast mind back to when we've all been setting managers, by the way, setting leaders, setting managers. So we have that experience behind us. What were the values that you held most dear, considering that we work in the early years and the type of work that we do? What were sort of the things that were always at the forefront of your mind?
For me, right from day one, passion in all sort of senses of the word. So right from the interview process, I want to see people that are passionate about early years and about having an impact on a child's life right from the early years. So passion for that parent partnership, passion for inclusive practice, passion for creating stimulating environments for the children. And I think if somebody is passionate, they will truly give their all to their job role.
Do you know what? I really agree with that. And because you can teach the health and safety, and you can teach how to go about your daily routine, but what you cannot teach is that real interest in children, that passion for working with children, and that excitement that you get for coming to work each day.
I love how Lauren mentioned actually about seeing that right from the beginning, from interview stage. And that was something I used to actively put on my job description, was the values of my setting. And it's really interesting because sometimes, Tasha, you used the term buzzwords earlier. Mm. They can become buzzwords which are used. And, you know, obviously they're differentiated between company and company, but they should be the forefront of what you do. And for me, it was always that child center, that child is at the center. If you're making the best decision for the child or a group of children, you can't go wrong from that. If you're working within integrity, you're following the policies, procedures, etc., brilliant, and working together. I think I agree. And it's always put in different ways, isn't it, in a setting. But whatever those words are and whatever those values are you hold dear, you want from the set go. And I like that Lauren kind of mentioned that it's from that right beginning.
I do. And we've been talking about that in some of the virtual classrooms as well. When do you actually start talking about your values? And it's come out over and over again, Emma, what you said is that right from day dot, when they're mentioned in the job advert, brought up at interview process. Lauren, what do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, right from the job advert, when somebody's first applying for the job, I think it's important that they see that job advert, or they see your website. Social media's got such a big following now, so maybe through your social media posts, that you do put the child at the center of everything you do. And like you said, Tasha, couldn't have put it better myself. You can teach the knowledge side. It's all well and good having someone that is really knowledgeable, and obviously that plays a massive part in knowing your legislation, knowing your policies and procedures. But actually, it's that level of care. If somebody doesn't care, or they just don't have the passion for it, and they do see it as a day job, and they go and do their job, and then they switch off from it, and that's that. I think you can see that. And I think it is important, obviously, to be able to switch off and draw a line when your day is done, but equally having that passion and wanting to go the extra mile for those children. Because at the end of the day, and I harp on about this all the time, but the early years are truly the most instrumental of any person's life. And that is something I'm such an advocate for.
Same. And I know that we're all delivering and working in and having an impact on early years in a different way now, in our the way that our roles have gone and our careers have moved on. But I think we've all come from that knees on the floor, working in the rooms, because I'm even when we were leading, we were still working in the rooms and cleaning the toilets and cooking and doing everything, you know, school runs, whatever needed to be done, because that is the passion. The job just it needs to happen. It needs to get done. And we, you know, so everybody chipping in, I guess, too, you know, everybody playing their part, sharing the load could be a value as well, really, couldn't it?
If we always felt as well that when I suppose from my point of view, from values, sometimes I would interview somebody and their values wouldn't match mine.
Mm.
I never forget. I once had an interview. She was really lovely. She had the most fantastic CV, particularly when it came to her knowledge and everything like that. But she was very much, her pedagogy was what I would call old school. Mm. There wasn't that in the moment understanding, the sustained shared thinking, the being down on a child's level. She was very old school, almost I teach you. And that was her kind of value on learning and development for children. And it didn't align with ours, which was very much, again, that child-centered, child interest, taking the child's lead, that spark. And it really did make me go, oh, that doesn't match what we value here. Because it wasn't a big push for us.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to that, like, flexibility. And you can talk about flexibility in the early years on a small scale, where in the setting day to day, are you able to be flexible and go, actually, this activity I spent ages planning and preparing for actually really isn't taking off. It's not capturing the children's interests. But then looking at it on the bigger scale as well, that are we evolving with the times? Are we being flexible with that more child-centered learning approach? Are we following that in the moment and the findings around actually in the moment planning, working really effectively, as opposed to very structured and what I would sort of refer to as more rigid play? And I'm not saying that there's not benefits to that more adult-led play, but again, that flexibility in the moment to hold your hands up and say, this isn't really working. What can I do right here, right now to capture these children's imagination?
I share examples often when I'm teaching about times when I've planned something absolutely amazing that I can't wait to share with the children. And say, particularly this happened in the preschool room, and said, any questions? And what would you like to do next? And little hand went up and said, can we go play now? And everyone was like, oh, got it. Got me right in the heart. But it really taught me a valuable lesson, you know. And you're exactly right that responding to children in the moment cannot be taught. So if we think about this, so we've mentioned child-centered, right? We've talked about parent partnership. Why do we think the parent partnership or any, in fact, I would go further than parent partnership. I would say partnership in general. Some of our outside professionals as well. Why then is that, should that be one of our values, and why is that so important, do we think?
I think, and this is quite an outdated term now, but that team around the child, I still refer to that, even with learners today, the team around the child, although it's not the sort of the common term used nowadays, we are a team and we need to work as a team to promote that child. And again, I think everything we do, if you can link it back to that child-centered value. So when we're working in partnership with agencies, organisations, parents, carers, the wider family. Again, if you are able to work effectively with them by doing that, you are putting your children first. I had a really nice chat with a learner a couple of weeks ago, and it's not often within my current role that I get to speak with learners, but I stepped in and covered a mock professional discussion, and this learner spoke so confidently about their key person approach and the attachment theory, and it just flowed so beautifully that it really sort of put that, I can't think of the right term, but sort of that fire in my belly of, oh, I'd love to sort of get back into early years and see the impact of the key person approach again, because that is something, obviously, I love my job that I do now, but it is something that we might miss a little bit in the current roles that we're all in.
And it happens as you step away from the floor into leadership, particularly if you're moving into senior leadership and maybe further away from being on the floor every day. We've talked a lot again in the virtual classrooms about making that move from operational leader, which is the bread and butter of what we do, to strategic leading. And you know, what that looks like. But I'm just thinking about this with the staff. So we talked about child-centered partnerships. I agree, Emma, with partnerships as well. What do you think?
I think you want your parents and your carers. This was always something that I found really interesting. You want them to be on board with your values as well. So when we were talking about values on job descriptions, it was also embedded within our website, within our policies, within our any kind of literature or things, signage around the building as well. And I feel that that is such a big token for you as a setting. This is what we value. This is what we believe in. This is what we want for you and your child. I just think that's such a prominent thing to say to somebody. This is what we do. And again, I've come across parents who maybe do not agree with the values of what we do.
Oh, that's many.
Just going to bring it back to that again. Sorry, learners, I'm being controversial today. You know what I'm like. But I've certainly come up against it with the learning and development opportunities that I've provided. And parents are like, no, I want my child to sit down and learn how to count and add numbers together. And, you know, those real, I would say, reception years ideas, they want them brought forward to early years. And I'm not saying that there is not a place for school readiness. That's not what I'm saying at all. But the value that we had was very much child-centered, letting their learning take their lead, let them use in their creative, imaginative, engineering minds, whatever you want to call it. And because I wasn't sitting children down handwriting with them, that was an issue.
So, well, and I've had this conversation before as well, whether it be about not wanting a male practitioner to be a key person or do nappy changes, or whether it be, I don't want my child to go outside today or something. So, mm-hmm. But the values of the setting are such, you know, so that can you start to gently push back? Of course, you don't want to belittle anybody or, you know, not listen to what they're saying. But at what point do we start to live our values? Values are quite easy when things are going along smoothly. It's when you get the pushback, when you've got competing responsibilities or priorities, that's when values are hard, when it might cost you something. And we've spent a lot of time talking about that. So if you're gently pushing back at a parent saying, but this is the type of learning that we do here, has there ever been a point when you have said, either of you, perhaps this is not the setting for you?
I'm quite lucky that I've never been in that specific situation, but it does make three of us where I have had a challenging conversation, particularly around school readiness. We had a scenario once where a parent who seemingly loved the setting, older child and younger child both attended at the time, but they was taking their older child out because they felt that they needed more structure in their play. And they sort of said, oh, we just feel that they need to start getting ready for school. And it came as a real shock because we had both the children there. And obviously it was, we always try and retain our children where we can and sort of try and support the understanding of where our values come from. But that did spark a bigger conversation that although we are promoting school readiness day in, day out in terms of independence and getting children to be able to put on their shoes, toilet themselves, developing not necessarily sitting down writing activities, but developing those fine motor skills, things like playing with Play-Doh, using scissors correctly. But our sort of issue there was that we weren't actually promoting that. So they saw that as general nursery activities. They didn't see what we was doing there, that things like playing with the Play-Doh and threading activities, although it looked like just general day-to-day play from an outside perspective, what we then realised we weren't doing is saying, this is our school readiness. So although you think that we're not preparing the children for reception, what we are doing is teaching those core skills that they can then develop on.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's really interesting as well. And that's very reflective and it's very brave as leaders, I think, to be reflective when you get that pushback or when you get that challenge to your values, that you actually, instead of just immediately jumping to defense mode, that you actually take a moment, reflect and think, are we actually upholding our values? And then maybe one of those keys, that's partnership, isn't it? Is making sure that we're sharing with families, parents, what we mean by pedagogy in the early years and how school readiness isn't writing their name or saying the alphabet or phonics or anything like that. It's being able to sit down in an activity for any particular length of time. It's being able to put their own coat or shoes on, wipe their nose, wash their hands, have the physical strength, Lauren, as you said, to hold a pencil. Yeah. So that's examining, and that'd be part of the values as well, though, wouldn't it? As making sure that families and staff all understand that.
Yeah. And that independence is, I think, really important, even in baby room right up to preschool, getting our sort of five risers ready for reception is teaching that independence and encouraging our staff. Again, it's so easy at times to step in, and I've had quite big discussions with staff before around not intervening, that yes, a child might be trying to do their shoes and 10 minutes later they're still trying to do their shoes, but if they are engaged in putting their shoes on themselves in that moment, not to intervene and go, oh, I'll just do it for you because it's easier, but actually encourage that. And I think that can be hard as well. It's sort of knowing when to hold them, knowing when to fold them when you're back on stepping in and intervening. And the same with parents as well, but that we're sharing that information so they can then create that home learning environment as well, and sort of not replicate it because it will never be identical, but so that we are all working from the same hymn sheet.
And that brings it right back very neatly to child-centered values and partnership as well. So these values aren't just independent. They're sort of symbiotic. They work together, really, don't they? Whatever it might be. So we've talked about parents and about sharing that information, but let's think about, if we take it back to staff, I've certainly went into settings as a new leader, new manager, and to have a conversation with the staff about the values. And I've had staff say, what do you mean by the values? These are our policies and procedures, you know, and not actually understand what we mean by values. So how do you ensure that your staff, because how can you ask them to uphold something if they don't understand them, right? So how do we make sure? And Emma, you said from the beginning, you had it on your job adverts. You talked about it in an interview.
Yeah, I talked about it in an interview. Obviously, back then there was the CEF as well. So we would have it as a focus within our CEF.
Oh, the CEF. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, going back now, guys. Yeah, I used to, everything we would do would feed back to those. Every staff meeting we had, just as important as safeguarding health and safety is on every meeting, so were our values, because that was the core of who we were. We weren't, you know, we're not like a big Tesco's, you know. We had those values which were unique to us and what made the setting the way it was. And I think that that itself is a special thing, isn't it? It's what you uphold. It's your golden thread. And I think it's about that constant reevaluation of them. I loved how you talked about reviewing them and reflecting on them, because I do think that that's really important, making sure anytime you've got a policy update that they, where does that link? Why are we doing it? Because it's there.
And that's a really good point as well, because when we think about any kind of leadership decision that we have to make, and that can be an operational decision or a strategic decision, any decision that we make, of course, we always look to our policies and procedures, because that's our statutory obligation, right? To make sure that we're getting it right and that we're in the parameters of the law. But also, equally, any values that we are putting out there should also form a part and should be discussed during the decision-making process. What do you think? Go ahead, Emma. Sorry, Lauren. That was Lauren, sorry.
Just got too excited to talk then. And I think that largely comes back to, one, again, being flexible, but also creating a democracy within your team and not a dictatorship. So reflecting on, okay, this is our ethos, but actually changing with the times, how are we evolving that and how are we developing on that to ensure that we are, again, keeping the children's best interests at heart, but also the interests of our staff as well, that the staff have a welcoming, safe, warm, staff-centered environment as well. Because I think if you've got happy staff, you'll have happy children. If you have happy children, you'll have happy families. It's like you said, they're all so interlinked, that the values and the way that we promote that, they're so intertwined with one another. I don't think you can talk about one value without talking about another.
No, I don't think you can. I think it certainly shouldn't. And I like the idea that staff well-being is a value as well. And And I can tell you, I've actually left a setting before. I have shared this because the value, the espoused value, which is what we say we do, was about staff well-being. But in actual practice, that was not happening from the top down. That was not, there was no value for staff. And it was very apparent. And after, you know, a time that gets very tiring as a senior leader when you're trying to protect your staff and whatnot. So if your values don't line up with the setting's values, or you feel that they're not doing what they say they're doing on the tin, right? All of those lovely inspirational slogans that look really good in a picture on the wall, or they look good in the paperwork or on the website, but aren't actually happening. Because I would say, and tell me what you think, that a lot of parents will choose your setting based on how comfortable they are with the values that you are saying that you hold dear. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think it's that feeling they get when they come in as well. A lot of time when I used to do show arounds and whatnot, a family would say to me, oh, we just, the second we walked in, we loved it. That the staff are playing with the children and the children seem genuinely happy, and that it's not very regimented play. Whereas again, like you say, I've worked at other settings that didn't necessarily align specifically with my values. And you'd pick that up from different families, which really enjoy that and they like the structured play, whereas other families might come in and think, oh, actually this is a bit too strict and sort of learn, quote unquote, desk-based learning focus. So I think again it comes back to that reflection, doesn't it, looking at what works well for our families. I think it depends on whereabouts your setting's based. Are you in quite an affluent area? Are you in a more deprived area? But again, looking at the bigger picture and not just your setting. And that, again, links back to things like your cultural capital, how you're embedding that with the children, how you're constantly building that bigger jigsaw.
I think that's really important what you've touched base on there. I was in a very deprived area. The local borough went bankrupt. That support that we had was coming from within rather than external. And if anything, that's when the values mattered more than anything, because that's what we use to advocate and use our voices for when we needed particular support for children, because we really believed in what we were doing. And I think there was definitely settings locally to us where they would have sort of bigger corporations. So they had access to outside funds, which we didn't. And that meant that every time we were going in there and requesting for something, we were really putting everything on the line to get that. We were really pushing for that. And I think it makes such a difference. But again, if you uphold your values, you uphold that integrity of what you are pushing forward and what you're there for. I think it's Tasha, we were having a discussion about the price of a child, weren't we? We were talking about funding availability for children from borough to borough, and how in one borough it was like £12 something per child, and in another borough it was £5 something. And, you know, it just shows that across the UK and regionally, that the price of a child is not equal. It's dependent on your local authority. So when you've got that above you as a setting, as a leader and a manager, which is dictating what you can then do with what you've got, you know, that's not a fair starting point or standard for anyone, is it?
Especially not children.
And values often come up against it the most. It's often hardest. Money. Let's just say it. We'll just name it. Money, funding. That often is when the values become harder to uphold, when you are trying to provide a service, you know, and you have to make these tough decisions between, you know, do we get the floor fixed or do we do up the sensory room? I don't know. I'm just throwing some ideas out there. And you think, you know what, actually, as much as the getting the sensory room fixed would be all singing, all dancing and amazing, if somebody falls through the hole in the floor in the preschool room, that's bad. So our precious funds have got to go to fix the hole in the floor. And that you can see your values there, because that's health and safety, which of course always should be at the top of our list of priorities, against doing something that's going to make you more marketable by having this lovely new sensory room. Do you see what I mean? That's just an example that kind of I'm throwing out there. And it's the hardest, I think, when it comes sometimes to money. I'm thinking about communication here. And we've had, and I'm curious to hear what you guys have to think about this. It was, we were talking about communicating out the values, sharing them out with the staff, maybe having the staff can be part of creating values, or having, you know, workshops around values. We do a lot of, when we do our inductions, it's always health and safety, safeguarding, and as it should be, of course. But do the values play a part in our induction, or could they play a part in the induction as well, to make sure people are firmly on board with our values? But when it comes to communication, so now we've got to communicate tough choices that we have to make. And we've all been there, haven't we? We've all had to make tough choices. We've had to make the decisions that maybe somebody wasn't very happy with us. No, have either of you, I keep asking this question in all of my virtual classrooms, have either of you ever had the golden moment where you've made a decision that pleased absolutely everybody involved? I would love to hear it if you have, because I've not come across it yet.
That's a mean question that could take a big pause.
I've never done it. I don't think I can see you both thinking.
There's nothing that springs to mind that makes me go, well, yeah, everybody was happy with that decision that I made. I can't think of
the Yeah, we did one, but it was actually for the staff. It was well-being for the staff, where they could have a treatment as like a thank you for all of their hard work. So they could have a little like a well-being treatment.
That's nice.
They were all on board with that.
But I think you're cheating, because that's an easy one.
Yeah, because you're giving somebody something.
The finance director wasn't happy, though, because they had to pay the bill.
Yeah, it was really sweet, actually. We'd had a really tough time, and we did, the team did really well in Ofsted. And so it was a case of just want to make sure everybody feels celebrated and rewarded for that. I feel like there's always difference of opinion, but I don't ever see that as a bad thing. I don't know what you guys think. Sometimes it's because I haven't thought of something.
No, I
absolutely agree.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to have different people weighing in, because my own experiences will have influenced the way that I think a setting should be run. The place that I was raised will influence that. And I think we actually teach this in one of our level three apprenticeships here, is we look at your own ethics as an early years practitioner, as an early years educator. What might be important for you is not going to be important for others. So something that sprung to mind when Emma, you was talking about sort of the different affluent area and things like that. I came from a setting that was in quite an affluent area, and I went to quite a deprived area. And there was a day where I got out a tough tray, and I made like a farm tough tray with all different cereals and stuff in it in the baby room. So if the children ate it, it wasn't the end of the world, because it was all edible. But it caused, actually, I'm not a fan of conflict in particular. I don't think many people are. But it caused quite a lot of conflict in the baby room for my team, because a lot of the people saying, well, we shouldn't be doing this.
Wasting the food.
Yeah, because we're wasting the food. So for me, I was like, they're exploring their senses. And I love a messy food activity. But others were like, but then we've got a food bank out the front for where we bring in tins of food and dried goods for our families who actually can't afford to go and do a weekly food shop and things. And I just didn't, and I was quite sort of, I had my blinkers on, I guess. I didn't think of it that way. And I'm really lucky, and I'm in a privileged position to say that. But actually, it did cause a bigger issue, because we also didn't want to take that away. It was part of our ethos that we use lots of natural resources. But we did have to go back to the drawing board on that one and say, okay, but what can we use that are not sort of consumable items? Because there is that bigger issue in the area that we was based.
That is so interesting. And I think that brings it back to a conversation we've been having a lot about too, which is that internal bias. Mm-hmm. That you do view the world through the lens of your own experience. Right. And so it might mean that you automatically gel, or maybe like you said, your blinkers on, and you would assume that somebody who you feel, without even realizing, feel more in tune with, is the one who's telling you the truth, or who is the way that you need to go, or the side of the decision you need to land on, as opposed to sort of, I mean, just being a leader is very raw, isn't it? It's very painful sometimes to pull back and strip back those layers of yourself and expose in to yourself your own kind of, I don't want to say shortcomings, but where you're not necessarily as strong as you'd like to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And it's about, again, we talk about it when we're looking at things like observations and assessments, but are we being objective in the moment? Are we being subjective in the moment? Are we looking, again, at that bigger picture?
Yeah, absolutely. And Wow. I mean, I wish we had all the time in the world to continue this conversation, because I've had such a good time with you guys today. And I think we need to do it again sometime. Thank you so much for joining us, Lauren. I really appreciate it. And Emma, thank you as well, as always. And thank you to our listeners for listening to this episode. So if you could leave a review or a comment on your favorite podcast platform, it helps us to spread the word and improve the quality of early years apprenticeships. You can also contact us via podcast@bestpracticenet.co.uk if you have any feedback or suggestions for the show, and we might revisit them in a future episode. Come on, join the conversation. What are your thoughts on today's topic? Do you have any questions or insight that you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. So let us know. And that's all for this episode today. So until next time, take care and goodbye.